Advantages of acapella. Please to Matthew for the reading from the Gospels. Matthew chapter 20. Is it you want? He asked. She said, grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at your left in your kingdom. You don't know what you're asking, Jesus said to them. Can you drink the cup I am going to drink? We can, they answered. Jesus said to them, you will indeed drink from my cup, but to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared by my Father. When the 10 heard about this, they were indignant with the two brothers. Jesus called them together and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Now turn with me, please, to Romans chapter 13. We're dealing with civil government here today. Romans chapter 13, beginning in verse 1. A very strange experience once from a man who was a mayor of this city. I said to him, you know, we're praying for you. He said, you are. And he was almost frightened. And I said, yes. He said, well, why? I said, because you are a minister of God to us for good. That's the old King James way of saying Romans 13. And he said, oh, well, fine, please do. But let's read 13. Romans 13, beginning in verse 1. Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Do you want to be free from fear of the one in authority? Then do what is right, and he will commend you. For he is God's servant to do you good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword for nothing. He is God's servant, an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. Therefore, it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also because of conscience. Now turn with me, please, to Esther. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther. For the reading from the Old Testament. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther. Esther chapter 4, beginning in verse 6. The decree had gone out. The Jews were all to be killed throughout the entire kingdom. Esther is inside the harem. And she sends out her trusted servant, Hathach. Chapter 4, verse 6. So Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict for their annihilation, which had been published in Susa, to show to Esther and explain it to her. And he told him to urge her to go into the king's presence to beg for mercy and plead with him for her people. Hathach went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, all the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that he be put to death. The only exception to this is for the king to extend the golden scepter to him and spare his life. Now down in verse 15. Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai. Go, gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the palace in front of the king's hall. The king was standing on his royal throne, was sitting on his royal throne in the hall, facing the entrance. When he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased with her and held out to her the gold scepter that was in his hand. So Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. Then the king asked, "What is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom it will be given you." "If it pleases the king," replied Esther, "let the king, together with Haman, come today to a banquet I have prepared for him." "Bring Haman at once," the king said, "so that we may do what Esther asked." So the king and Haman went to the banquet Esther had prepared. As they were drinking wine, the king said, a king again asked Esther, "Now, what is your petition? It will be given you. And what is your request? Even up to half the kingdom it will be granted." Esther replied, "My petition and my request is this. If the king regards me with favor, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, let the king and Haman come tomorrow to the banquet I will prepare for them. Then I will answer the king's question." Now, chapter 7, verse 1. So the king and Haman went to dine with Queen Esther, and as they were drinking wine on that second day, the king again asked, "Queen Esther, what is your petition? It will be given you. What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom it will be granted." Then Queen Esther answered, "If I have found favor with you, O king, and if it pleases your majesty, grant me my life. This is my petition, and spare my people. This is my request. For I and my people have been sold for destruction and slaughter and annihilation. If we had merely been sold as male and female slaves, I would have kept quiet, because no such distress would justify disturbing the king." King Xerxes asked Queen Esther, "Who is he? Where is the man who has dared to do such a thing?" Esther said, "The adversary and enemy is this vile Haman." Then Haman was terrified before the king and queen. The king got up in a rage, left his wine, and went out into the palace garden. But Haman, realizing that the king had already decided his fate, stayed behind to beg Queen Esther for his life. Just as the king returned from the palace garden to the banquet hall, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was reclining. The king exclaimed, "Will he even molest the queen while she is with me in the house?" As soon as the word left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. And then verse 10, they hanged Haman on the gallows he had prepared for Mordecai, and then the king's fury subsided. Look on down in chapter 8, verse 7. King Xerxes replied to Queen Esther and to Mordecai the Jew, "Because Haman attacked the Jews, I have given his estate to Esther, and they have hanged him on the gallows. Now write another decree in the king's name, in behalf of the Jews, as seems best to you, and seal it with the king's signet ring. For no document written in the king's name and sealed with his ring can be revoked." And then look in chapter 9, verse 20. So Queen Esther, daughter of Abihail, along with Mordecai the Jew, wrote with full authority to confirm the second letter concerning Purim. And Mordecai sent letters to all the Jews in the 127 provinces of the kingdom of Xerxes, words of goodwill and of assurance. The little orphan girl who became the queen, I noticed somehow or other the adjective was changed. It's not a queen. This man is king of all the kings. He's the emperor. From India all the way across North Africa, the one country that held out was Greece. He had conquered everything else. And then he conquered Greece. And he threw that big banquet right after that, 180 days of feasting. The climax of it all was that week of drinking. And then to climax that, he had shown off everything else that he had. And he brought in Vashti to show her off. And I believe out of modesty, she said no. They'd been drinking for a week. And there was no good reason for her being there. And as a result of her saying no, she was banished. And the emperor, and he was a king of kings. He wasn't just an ordinary king. All the world, the known world, there wasn't anything else worth conquering. All the world belonged to him at that point. One of the most powerful emperors the world has ever seen. Artaxerxes, shorten it, nickname it, Xerxes. And through it all, God is working his own plan for rescuing his own people. I want you to see, girls and boys, especially as you make your drawings today, and for those of you who haven't been here before, the boys and girls draw the sermon, and then I get the pictures afterwards. And it makes a very beautiful way of me remembering the outlines of the sermons that I preach, because those pictures are very vivid. And they're very accurate. They're very good. And I'll tell you in a minute about a thing that I think maybe you can draw this morning. It has to do with Esther. But the whole history of Esther shows how precious God's people are in his eyes. The lengths that he'll go to in order to protect you if you've trusted in him. How he'll protect his people when you belong to him and trust in him. Because God worked it out in such a way that King Xerxes, emperor of the whole world, in his pride and his arrogance, after showing off, and he was a wicked man. He was seven devils rolled into one. But God showed him, overruled him, in such a way as to cause him to be the very means of rescuing people who had trusted in him, people like yourselves. Tells us about how when Artaxerxes first saw Esther, it says the king was attracted to Esther more than to any of the other women, and she won his favor and approval more than any of the others. So he set a royal crown on her head and made her the queen in place of Vashti. But he was controlling the whole situation, the comings and goings of nations, in order to rescue his own people. And he was using a girl, a little slave girl, whose uncle had adopted her and had reared her and had built some of the characteristics of his own character into her life. And some of those characteristics were such that when that emperor saw her, he wanted her to be his queen. Now, children, that's about as far as we got last week. How God will control circumstances in an amazing way to build you into the person he wants you to be, put you into the position that he wants you to be in, and make you excited about making other people successful. Now, that's a little clue about what's coming a little bit more of this morning, too, because that was one of the reasons why the emperor really liked her. She was so excited about making other people successful. God taught her that through Mordecai. Parents, This is where you come into that picture. Because God will teach your children what you're excited about. Mordecai was so excited about making his little niece successful that he adopted her and he lived his life into her. And Mordecai had this attitude of being excited about making other people successful. One of the little sidelights that's in this story here tells about how he was sitting at the gate one day and he overheard two of the king's servants who were plotting to kill King Xerxes and assassinate him, it would have been. And so he got the word, to the king. And the king wasn't killed. But that's just Mordecai. He's just interested in making other people successful. He had every reason to hate that man. But instead of that, he rescued him, risked his own life and saved his life. And the Jews of the nation, in the last verse in this book, the last verse, it says, chapter 10, verse 5, Mordecai, the Jew, was second in rank to King Xerxes. Now, this is after everything else has taken place. He was second in rank to King Xerxes himself. Preeminent among the Jews, held in high esteem by his many fellow Jews, because, here it comes, he worked for the good of his people and spoke up for the welfare of all the Jews. Wish every man in office would do that. But that's Mordecai. He was excited about making other people successful. He was so excited about making other people successful that he was able to teach Esther to do that. He showed Esther how to be excited about finding her life purpose in making other people successful. Doing what Jesus had said was his own life purpose, not to be served by other people, but to serve other people. Exact opposite of Haman, who was so self-centered, he was going to force everyone to get down on their knees whenever he walked down the street, just bow to him. And when there was one who didn't, and that happened to be Mordecai would not bow to him. When there was one who didn't, he found out what nationality that man belonged to. And he was not only going to have him killed, hanged on a gallows 75 feet high that he had erected right there near the palace, but every Jew that lived on the face of the earth. That's the place, of course, where Esther came into the picture. Now, today we want to focus on Esther's behavior as the queen. Esther behaved like a queen. And children, this may give you some indication of what you want to draw. There are 10 lessons here that God is teaching us about how to become a queen or a king, and how to behave like a queen or to behave like a king. And then we'll be summarizing that in 4 steps. What it takes for you and me to become a queen or a king today. The setting focuses on Esther. You may find something here that you want to draw. Haman had deceived King Xerxes into thinking that all the Jews were traitors and that they were bad for him. And Xerxes therefore had decreed the death of all the Jews in all his 127 different provinces around the world, and the future of the whole Jewish race was at stake. But Mordecai gets the word into Queen Esther and begs her to go to the king to beg for the lives of the whole Jewish nation. Time is short. The decree has already been written and issued and sent out to the various provinces. Esther sends word back to Mordecai and says, I can't. I can't do that. I'm not allowed to go into him. The law says that any man that goes in to see him without having already been bidden, he'll die. Unless, of course, he should happen to raise that golden scepter. Mordecai sends back word to Esther, you've got to do it. This is why you've been brought into the kingdom for such time as this. This is the opportunity. If you don't, your whole nation, your whole family will be wiped out. So Esther says, all right, I'll do it. But Mordecai, I want you to ask all the Jews, I want you to direct all the Jews to fast with me for 3 days. On that third day, I will go in. And if I perish, I perish. She appeared in the inner court, and the king looked up and saw her standing there in her royal robes. And he lifted that golden scepter. If he had not done that, she would have died. He lifted that gold. Have you ever seen a little boy or a little girl lift their fingers, and then you've gone over, and they just held their fingers up, and you touched their finger, and it was what they wanted? And it was the touch. And somehow or other, that's what we're seeing on a national and international level here, as he held up that scepter. Very specific about how Esther came forward and touched the tip of that royal scepter. And the relationship between her and the emperor is very beautifully portrayed in that particular symbol. And the king said to her, whatever you want, the half of my kingdom, it's yours, just ask. And I think I could have heard many people who at that point would have gone on a real rampage against Haman and against everything else. And she said she knew that she's behaving like a queen. It wasn't the time to say what the need was. And she said, King, you gave a banquet for me. Now I want to give a banquet for you. And by the way, would you bring Haman? And he said, get him. We'll go right now, whenever you say. He's so pleased that this queen is, I think, behaving a little bit like a wife. And he can't believe it. He's never had a wife. He has a harem. He doesn't have a wife. And at that banquet there, he says again, now, what is it that you'd like? I just want to give you something you've given me. You've made me happy. What can I give you? And she said, it still wasn't the right time. How she knew, I don't know. But she said, would you come to another banquet tomorrow? And he said, yes. She said, I'll tell you exactly what it is that I need tomorrow. Well, can you tell the pressure that's building up in him? What is it that she wants? What is it that she needs? She's behaving like a queen. She knows that the power is in the hands of a wife, and she's using it as a queen. And so the next day as they come in there, they're eating. And he says, now what is it? What can I do? But his desire, his decision's already made. What can I do? What is it that you want? And she says, I just want my life and the life of my people. Would you please spare my people? And he's blindsided. There's a blind spot that he's never seen. And she didn't walk into him and say, now you're blind. Can't you tell what he's doing? How you've been deceived? She brings him to the point of asking and wanting to know whatever it is she has to say. And then she tells him very plainly, it's this vile Haman. Just like that, he realized that the edict that he had written had been one that was a death sentence, not only to her, but to all her people. And so he was enraged by having been deceived by one that he'd trusted. And so he goes out, and Haman is just begging for his life at that point, and the king comes back, and he finds him. He's fallen down on the queen's couch, and they just cover his face. And they go out and hang him at that point. Now, boys and girls, there's lots of things that you can draw out of that. But I want to go on here to these lessons that God is teaching us. The first one is how to respond to a position, to a person who is in a position of particular responsibility. There are 10 lessons here. 10 descriptions of how a person behaves when they're behaving like a queen or like a king. Mordecai, you see, had taught Esther not to work against the king, but to work through the king as one who could best protect all the Jews and rescue them and work through them. Mordecai taught Esther how to work through civil government, not against it. Mordecai must have despised Xerxes for the kind of brute, cruel man that he was. But he taught Esther to respect Xerxes. And it's a very interesting thing, because in his own attitude and relationship to Xerxes, we see that reflected in chapter 2 and verse 20 and in Esther's attitude towards Mordecai. She continued to follow Mordecai's instructions as she had done when he was bringing her up. Now, it's hard to get a beauty queen to continue to follow instructions, especially when she becomes the queen. That would have been very difficult for Esther to have continued to follow the instructions of her uncle. You put yourself in her shoes. Everybody else is bowing to her. And then this old uncle, who's now out of the picture, she's the queen, he's gone. Same attitude that many children have towards their parents. Same attitude. After they get a little older. Is that your attitude towards your parents? I'm not responsible to him anymore. He has ideas. I have my ideas. But somehow or other, Mordecai had infected Esther with the excitement about making other people successful, so that now she's still excited about making him successful as her uncle, her guardian, and the one who ultimately becomes, of course, the prime minister. But she didn't know that at this time. Not easy for a beauty queen to keep on accepting counsel from an old uncle. But she did. She did. And that's the first thing that God's teaching us. The second one is that God taught Esther how to make a distinction between personality and position. A king had a terrible personality. He was a very evil, cruel, brutal man. But God had allowed him to come into a position of responsibility and authority. She hated him. In a sense, she must have. His perversity. But he was still in a position of responsibility. I was in the position a few weeks ago of asking for that appointment with Mr. Gorbachev and Mr. Yeltsin. And incidentally, pray for that, because as that team goes back in November, that request is on the books. And Senator Coates is going to be asking about that for us next week. Now, there are lots of things I can find wrong about those two men. And even the patriarch, Alexei, we've asked for an appointment with him. There are lots of things I can find wrong with him. But I know that he was still the man who stood there on the day of Mr. Yeltsin's inauguration and preached at Mr. Yeltsin's request. I don't think Mr. Yeltsin knew why he was going to preach. But after he was there, he couldn't stop him. And he preached. He simply said, the people of Russia need to be made over new again. And it's obvious that the government can't do that. The only one who can do that is Jesus Christ. That's the patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church. He's in the position. God, for some reason, allowed him to come into that position. Mr. Gorbachev, Mr. Yeltsin, they're in that position. And it's not right that we would be operating with the things that we're going to be doing with the educational program in Russia without their knowing it, without their understanding that. They may choose to ignore it. They may choose to condemn it. But still, they're in the position of responsibility there. And that's what, that's exactly what Mordecai had taught Esther to do. And that's what she's doing as she comes to the emperor. Third, God taught Esther that independence is not something she demands. It's something that she earns. Vashti demanded it. I don't know what else she could have done. I couldn't think of a creative alternative had I been in her position. But I just know that she lost it all when she demanded it. Esther earned it. And she won it all. She did what Mordecai had told her to do. And somehow or other, she caused herself to enjoy doing it. There's some people, I'll do what the old fellow told me to do, all right, but I'm not going to enjoy it. And they don't enjoy it. And their creativity is killed because of that. But she caused herself to find a way of enjoying it. Maybe the banquet that she invited him to was one of her ways of learning to enjoy what Mordecai had asked her to do. And she found reasons for his order. And so she didn't wait for the king to call her. She went to him. But she went to him somehow or other in royal robes in a way that would please him. She could have gone in sackcloth and ashes and said, they're going to kill me anyway, so I might as well dress like a corpse. But she didn't. She went in her royal robes and it pleased him. She did what he asked her to do. She enjoyed doing it. She found reasons for doing it. And she found creative ways of carrying it out. And fourth, God taught her how Mordecai's commands became more and more counsel and less commands. So Esther became the counselor for Mordecai. Do you see how she told him to go and get those Jews to pray for her? She's giving Mordecai instructions. There's a counsel relationship developed there. But it didn't begin by Esther's demanding something. It began by Esther's winning him and being excited about making him successful. And somehow or other, do you see the results of that? That Xerxes himself had so much confidence in Queen Esther that in the end he says, you just go ahead and write the decrees and stamp them with my signature. The queen writing the king's decrees and stamping them? That's counsel. That's counsel. She had earned it. But that's the way it'll develop. When you are genuinely excited about making someone else successful. Xerxes found that he could trust Esther and he could trust Mordecai. They would both be excited about making him successful. And fifth, God taught her how not to lose confidence in the king because he was one who could best protect her and her people. Instead of telling him off and demanding their rights, she didn't lose confidence. He's in a position. God put him in that position. God will use him. I can't see how God could use a guy like that. But God will use him. He'll use him not to kill my people, but to protect my people, the people who've trusted him. So that I work through him, not against him. And she looked behind the king's commands. Here's the sixth one, to kill all the Jews. And she remembered six things. And this is very, very important, that you would remember these things. These six things are so important for any person who wants to behave like a queen or a king. Desperately important for any person who wants to behave like a son or like a daughter. She remembered that he really did want her happiness. He didn't want her dead. He wanted her happiness. It's pretty clear, black and white in her case. But he really did want her to be a happy queen, not a dead one. She remembered that. And he wanted her security. If she's going to be a happy queen and not dead but alive, he's going to have to protect her. And so what she did was for the purpose of drawing out his protection. And he wanted to be needed by her. Something, I don't care who it is, there's something in a man that causes him to sort of ride forward protectively when he knows that some lady is depending on him. And somehow or other, she found a way of drawing that out, even of an emperor like Xerxes. And she wanted, she remembered that he wanted her to be socially acceptable, not another Vashti. And everything she did was quite different from Vashti. And she remembered that he wanted her to be loyal to him. And that's part of that, her touching the tip of that wand. I could see her walk forward there, as a queen would walk forward to touch the tip of that wand. She's following out the protocol. She remembered those six things, and those six things are very important. Your dad, your mother want you to be happy. I want you to be secure. I want to know that you know that you need them, that they need you, that they can be proud of what you're doing, that you are socially acceptable, that you are loyal to them. Do your dad and mother know that about you? Well, they certainly knew that. The king certainly knew that about Esther. And then seventh, God taught her how to develop creative alternatives. The king gave one banquet for Esther. It says it very plainly there in the book. She gave two banquets for him. She found a way to win his heart. And then eighth, God taught Esther how a spirit of wanting to respect authority will bring about creativity. It's rebellion. I wanted to tell him off. I can't think of anything creative when I'm that way. But where she really wanted to make him successful, then that idea of those two banquets and what she could give to him instead of what he could give to her, somehow or other, that really turned things on. We had an older son who had all his birthday dinners. Whenever we had a birthday cake, he always brought gifts for everybody else. I don't know where he got the idea. I heard of a family just the other day that where somebody in that family was doing that. But he gave one banquet, she gave two banquets. And then she asked him for something that he could do for her. And ninth, God taught her the timing and the proper wording. If it was just for my becoming a slave, I wouldn't have bothered you with it. But since it has to do with saving my life, and since I am the queen, then could you do something about that, please? And boy, did he respond to that. And God taught Esther how, when he is putting pressure on the person in position of authority, some of that pressure is going to come through to her. He pressured the king, and that came through to her in a hurry. Now, in summarizing all this, there are just four things. Get excited about making someone else successful. Your parents, your employees, your employer. And parents, by the way, how excited are you about making your sons or daughters successful? It goes both ways. And elders, how excited are you about making the congregation successful, every family and every person? And deacons, that same way, as we are excited about making each other successful. That's the key. And then build and rebuild the bridges to those who are in positions of responsibility, those that we've offended. Reviewing those past conflicts, asking for forgiveness, thanking them for the character that they've been building into our lives, and trying to build, to agree with them, and then to cooperate with them and participate with them in whatever it is that God has put on their hearts, getting back into the relationship of honoring and finding out what their goals for your life actually are, and for the business or for the school or for whatever it is. Ask them to help you in identifying blind spots in your own life, and then establishing those relationships of counsel that became so very important as Esther became the confidant of the emperor, of Mordecai, and of Mordecai's becoming the counselor to the king. It's a beautiful description of whatever everything Jesus was talking about when he said, that's my own life. I didn't come to serve, to be served. I didn't come to be served. I came to serve. Let's bow our hearts in prayer.